This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Kopitar wins the draw, backhanded over the stick of Pionk, and that'll do it here tonight. The five-game homestand will end with only one victory for the Winnipeg Jets and four losses. The Los Angeles Kings come in here and have an exquisite road game. The final score, the Los Angeles Kings 3. The Winnipeg Jets 2.
Paulie Edmonds with the call. That was Tuesday night at Bell MTS Place. The Winnipeg Jets dropping a 3-2 decision to the Los Angeles Kings. As you heard Paulie say, wrapping up the five-game, I guess, Bell MTS portion of the homestand with a 1-4 record. Tonight's game, technically, a home game at Mosaic Field in Regina.
I was actually thinking about that because Regina is kind of the middle point on the drive from Winnipeg to Calgary, right? If you've ever done that drive, but Regina is actually, I think, 100 or 150 kilometers closer to Winnipeg than it is to Calgary.
Dr. Geography.
I was going to say, what are you looking at? Are you a cartographer now, looking at maps all day long?
I'm Jacques Cartier.
Yeah. Anyways, yes, tonight, of course, the Heritage Classic in Regina. That was Ezra Ginsberg. The other man across from me is Dave Minuk. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Going to be a big night tonight in Regina. The number of people who've made the drive 6 hours west of us to take in what should be a fun experience at Mosaic Field.
I'm pretty sure Huss just went to bed.
You think he's? I'm not even sure that he's asleep yet. But there's a lot of people who are headed down there,
yep.
And it'll be a good party weekend, I think, in Regina as the Jets and the Flames will do battle in the 2019 Heritage Classic at, like I said, at Mosaic Field, and of course coverage of the game all day long here on TSN Radio 1290. You can reach us here in studio. Send us your tweets at Illegal Curve. We want to hear what's on your mind regarding the Winnipeg Jets, and of course you can also send us your text messages. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. Without further ado, gentlemen, let's get into the Winnipeg Jets and the five-game homestand that wrapped up on Tuesday night with that disappointing 3-2 loss to the Los Angeles Kings. You know, the Jets were probably feeling okay heading into that game. They won 1-0 in that very entertaining shootout against the Edmonton Oilers on Sunday night, shutting down a powerful Oilers offense.
You know, can we talk about that for a second? Like that 3-on-3, and I'm not sure if you guys caught the Oilers and Capitals, that 3-on-3. Leon Draisaitl got the overtime winner.
Right.
I mean, let's make 3-on-3 overtime 10 minutes and get rid of the shootout. Like, if anybody thinks that, you know, 3-on-3 overtime isn't far superior to the shootout, I mean, I can't hear that argument anymore.
Okay. You've made that argument.
Well, then, I'm just saying, like, teams like the Jets and the Oilers and throw in the Capitals. The reason why I mentioned the Capitals is just because we were talking about the Jets and the Oilers, and
yes,
you know, the Oilers ended up winning that game as opposed to losing the game against Winnipeg. But, you know, even though that first period, Drew, was just awful against the Kings, I mean, I think the reason why it was probably perceived as even worse than the shot count would indicate is because the Jets had so much momentum going into that game, right? They had only won the one game. So you're going into that game against the Kings. The Kings aren't very good. Sure, they're doing okay, but we know the Kings are most likely not going to be a playoff team. So that's why I think it was so disappointing. And, you know, Paul Maurice talked about that, Dave. They really had no reason to explain why they came out so flat, because the Kings just absolutely dominated the Jets in the first period. Yes, those two power plays that the Kings had helped, but regardless of that, it seemed like the Jets really didn't start playing until the second.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was, the shots were 7-2 in favor of LA rather quickly, and then they, like you said, Ezzy, they had those two power plays, and the Jets just never seemed to be able to get that momentum. I mean, Kyle Connor whiffed on that open net he had when the game was tied. I mean, he did score a goal in the game, but it just didn't feel like the Jets were going to be able to carry over the momentum from that Edmonton game into the Kings game, and I don't know what the reason for it was, but you kind of expected it to happen, and then when you saw that first period, you thought, how do you explain that? Because
21-5 shots on goal in favor of the Los Angeles Kings,
I mean,
on Tuesday night.
And if not for Connor Hellebuck, I mean, the game would have been over long before that. I mean, he was sensational. And, you know, he was pretty mystified about that third goal that Kopitar scored when he went around Morrissey, mm-hmm. and
tucked it through his armpit.
Yeah,
almost.
Kind of put it backhand and went, it was interesting because I was watching obviously from the spot in the press box, and you could see on Hellebuck's reaction, he was shocked.
Yeah.
He thought that puck went behind the net.
Yeah.
And then when he actually learned about that it actually went in the net, he was just like threw his head up going, what is going on? And then after the game in the dressing room, he was you could see he was just completely shocked about the fact that that goal had beaten him. Because, and again, he was obviously the difference in the game for the Jets, because if it wasn't for him, I mean, that game would have been over in the first period.
You know, that's the, to come out flat is one thing. I mean, you obviously don't want to come out flat, but usually you can find your skating legs after 5 minutes, after 7 minutes. You know, at some point in time, you get into the game. To be down, to give up 21 shots in a period is impressively bad. And then to only get 5 shots in a period against not an exquisite Los Angeles Kings team. I mean, let's be charitable. The Los Angeles Kings are not a very good hockey team. And to be down 21-5, and sure, you know, you window dress the second and the third period and you make it look a little bit better. But that's just such a troubling performance to me, coming off of what, you know, they talked about in the dressing room after Sunday's game against the Oilers as, you know, a big victory. We're feeling good about ourselves. The game looked how we wanted it to look.
You beat the best team in the Western Conference at that point.
At that point, you beat a very good Edmonton Oilers team that had been absolutely rolling, and it was a entertaining contest. The score being only 1-0 in a shootout doesn't reflect, you know, the quality of that game. Mm-hmm. And then to come out and just lay an absolute egg against the Los Angeles Kings, to me, is troubling. And I mean, I think you could see it in the face of the players post game. And we'll talk about Blake Wheeler's post game comments coming up next segment, where he talks about, you know, everybody sort of feeling bad for themselves in the dressing room. You know, the lack of energy, the lack of get after it when you have a bit of a weakened opponent coming into your own building, and all of a sudden, you know, the opportunity to finish your homestand with a 2-3 record instead of a 1-4 record, and they just didn't show any fight whatsoever until late in the first period at the earliest.
Right, and at the end of the day, the game was tied, so even though the first period was terrible, mm-hmm. the game was still tied, and they could have easily been the team that went up a goal and held on for the win, right? And like you said, Drew, then all of a sudden, you know, you win a couple games out of five as opposed to one game out of five. But, you know, the Kings still have Anze Kopitar and Drew Doughty. And, you know, what was probably most impressive to me is how well Jonathan Quick played, despite the fact that he's had a really tough start to the season, right? Yeah. We've talked about this in previous week's shows. Jonathan Quick's numbers have not been good to start the season. Does that have something to do with the fact that the defensemen in front of him aren't as good as they were back in the day when they were winning the Stanley Cups? Of course. But, you know, the point is, I think we've talked about this too many times already early on in the season. When you're 11 games into the season and you're continuously talking about how many shots the Jets are giving up, how bad the penalty kill is, it's the worst in the entire league. And I realized, like, that goal, I mean, it was a goal that, you know, Connor Hellebuck should have had, or he thought he should have had. But the point is, the power play wasn't able to save you. The power play has been really struggling the last couple of games.
We'll talk about that throughout the show as well.
But there's a lot of issues with this Jets team. And the reality is, if the Jets end up beating Calgary tonight in the Heritage Classic, we're probably not talking about it, because, I mean, they're 5-6. So if the Jets are, you know, 6-5, we're probably, you know, it's amazing how a win, a couple of points, 3 points can change everything, right? So I don't think it's all doom and gloom, Drew. I mean, there's a lot to be concerned about. I mean, you don't like the fact that Mason Appleton isn't going to be an option, even though it looked like Paul Maurice was going to go with Gabriel Bourque.
So let me just interrupt you there for a second, Ezzy. For those of you who may have missed it last night, Mason Appleton is going to be out at least a month, probably longer.
He said, don't ask me for a month.
Don't ask Paul Maurice for a month, so it tells you it's going to be longer. He broke his foot. Broke a bone in his foot playing football, you know, before they skated at Mosaic Field last night. So the Jets were, you know, goofing off. You see him play soccer.
Well, they're warming up.
They're warming up. I don't mean goofing off in a negative sense. So that's not the connotation I meant. Because you see him playing soccer before every single mm-hmm. warm-up. It's standard operating procedure in the NHL.
It was a complete fluke. If anybody is going to, you know, get on these guys, I mean, they're having fun.
It was a freak accident. He went to, as Paul Maurice said, he went for an interception. He landed poorly on his foot, and boom, he broke a bone in his foot.
It's so called bad luck.
That's 100% bad luck. I mean, that could happen. You know, you can't take anything more out of that, aside from it's a really bad break, pardon the pun, for Mason Appleton. I mean, you heard Paul Maurice say, you know, yesterday in his scrum, he said that, you know, right now it's a terrible, you know, terrible accident. Everybody feels terrible for him, but in about a week or 10 days time, the guys are going to be giving a lot of grief to Mason Appleton over the injury. Right now, in the immediacy of it's a really bad situation. The Jets, who are a very thin team in terms of their depth, are probably going to have to call up a forward to replace Mason Appleton, whether that's going to be Andre Chibasov or somebody else like that from the Manitoba Moose, maybe Luoto. We don't know yet. We haven't heard. The Moose, of course, are in Grand Rapids.
No, Chicago.
They played in Grand Rapids last night is what I meant.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're in Chicago now, so likely somebody's going to join the Jets on the road trip as they go west after the game tonight in Regina. But another sort of bad break, a bad circumstance for the Winnipeg Jets to start the season. 5-6 is their record, as you mentioned, and maybe that's just what we have to come to expect from this team, that it's just an average NHL team that is going to look good on some nights, and that's going to look poor on other nights.
And the reason why I think it's so unfortunate for Appleton is because regardless if he was going to play tonight in the Heritage Classic, or, you know, if he gets back into the lineup against the Ducks or one of these games coming up next week, the point is that for him, he wants to get back into the lineup and contribute because he doesn't have any points this year.
He needs to play.
Well, not only does he need to play, he wants to put up good numbers.
Yeah.
He wants to contribute, whether that's not just goals or assists, but the way he plays on the ice. So that's why it's so unfortunate for a guy like Mason Appleton. And, you know, going back to, you know, the Jets being a 500 team, I mean, if you look at, you know, the body of work here, the 11 games and the underlying numbers, I mean, we talked about it. The defensive issues have not gone away. And, you know, you don't want to say that, you know, this is a lost season yet, because I think you want to wait till probably closer to the 20 game mark, Dave, before you really start to, I think, evaluate
the white towel.
Well, but really start to evaluate this 2019-20 team, because I think, you know, you would really like to see a guy like Sammy Niku in there. I really do think that if the Jets had Niku in the lineup and you had a healthy decor, so that includes Nathan Beaulieu, because if you have Nathan Beaulieu, Dave, most likely Anthony Boteto is not playing.
Yeah.
Right?
Not most likely. He isn't. You would hope,
so,
you think.
I mean, you
hope.
It's really tough to evaluate this Jets team with the injuries they have on the back end. Yes, the defense is not as good as it was last year, but when you don't have Niku and Beaulieu to use, then you're forced to play the Anthony Botettos and you're forced to play the Carl Dahlstroms. And Dahlstrom's actually shown pretty well, I think.
Yeah. You know, Dahlstrom hasn't been the problem for this team. I mean, it's a lack of talent. I mean, it is a distinct lack of talent on the back end right now.
And almost like they have a giant hole.
Well, yeah, and that giant hole isn't getting filled no matter, you know, how many weeks was it? Last week where, you know, reportedly that the Dustin Byfuglien was getting closer to making a decision?
No, it said that there was optimism. I don't know that it said that he was closer to making a decision. I think there was optimism that he'd be making a decision indicating he was coming back.
Yeah.
But I don't know that there was anything about a timeline.
And I haven't heard any follow-up to that or anything along those lines.
Well, Dreger was on with Rick and Huss, and I think he said something along the lines of there's no, almost like the Jets will have an internal clock and they may start to pressure him at some certain point, but that there's no set date.
Well, it's 11 games into the season. You're 5-6. I mean, if pressure is going to work in this instance, and I don't know if it will or not, but it's time now to start applying that pressure before you get any further down this road.
Perhaps there'll be a WWE style.
He just comes on the ice.
I am a real American at the Heritage Classic.
Well, certainly that would be a splash. It would make a splash if that happened and it would get people buzzing. But
let me tell you, have people talking about the Heritage Classic.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I'm not sure that's going to be the case. But I mean, it was a bad road. It was a bad homestand for the Winnipeg Jets. I mean, you know, going back to it.
No, anyway, you slice and dice it. You can't go 1-5 at home or 1-4. Sorry,
yeah.
And then have that sort of situation. You're right, Drew. If you would have ended up being able to finish with two wins as opposed to one, maybe it offsets it a little bit because you had a decent 4-2-0 start.
Mm-hmm.
So you're okay in that regard. But, you know, again, it's tough. You have, and this is, I think, what fans are going to have to come to appreciate from the Jets this season with the question marks right now, is that this is what you're going to get on, you know, you're going to have guys who can score. We're going to see what happens in terms of a recall. I would guess, based on watching the Moose games and based on the fact that they're waiver exempt, that it's either going to be Luoto or Chibasov. I think Chibasov, they're both good players. I actually think you're not really going to go wrong with either of them being recalled. So I think they're both responsible. Chibasov actually didn't get a credit for an assist yesterday in the Jonathan Harkins goal, but he did the lion's share of the work. But either he or Luoto, I think, would be a fine recall. And again, both of them are waiver exempt. So I think from that perspective, you don't have to worry about them being sent down and being claimed or anything like that. So as opposed to Logan Shaw, who's the leading scorer for the Manitoba Moose, who would require waivers to go back to the Moose. So to my thinking, it's going to be probably Luoto or Chibasov. But regardless, I mean, there's something that the Jets coaching staff has to do to get this team scoring again, because, like, you know, it's funny how we talk about goals and goals not being a problem for the Jets. But right now, like if you look at them compared to Colorado's 42 goals, Nashville has 42 goals, you know, and the Jets are sitting there with 30.
And a lot of that is from the opening road trip where they were firing goals in at a pretty good pace.
Vegas 37, mm-hmm. Edmonton 35.
And it starts with the top line.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys. Like, it really does start with the top line. And, well, you know,
hold your thoughts there because sure. I want to go to break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about Blake Wheeler. We're going to talk about his struggles as of late. He hasn't scored a point in five straight games. That's his longest, point drought, since almost 7 years ago. So let's talk about the struggles of the top line. Let's talk about Blake Wheeler and his struggles to start the 2019-20 season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Yeah, I mean, we're a little snaked right now. Maybe because of that, we're feeling a little sorry for ourselves. You know, we got a young team, and I think not just the young players, but, you know, even the veteran guys, you know, when it's not bouncing our way and, you know, you're in the fight and you just can't seem to get it to turn around. It is certainly frustrating. So, that's a pretty lame excuse, but, it's the truth.
That's a frustrated Winnipeg Jets captain, Blake Wheeler, after Tuesday night's defeat to the Los Angeles Kings. The captain, the whole team looking for answers as the Jets finished up the homestand with a 1-4 record. Saturday morning, welcome back. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live here on TSN Radio 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. This segment of the program brought to you by our friends Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. So you heard from Blake Wheeler there. He's obviously frustrated with his performance. He's frustrated with the team's performance to start the season. He doesn't have a point, as I mentioned, in his last five games. That's his longest pointless drought since a six-game span near the end of the 2012-13 season. Is this just a Blake Wheeler problem, or is this a Winnipeg Jets problem, and they both sort of have to work their way out of it together?
Yeah, it's a good question, right? Because Wheeler's struggling, mm-hmm. but Mark Scheifele doesn't have any points in his last three games. Patrick Laine doesn't have any points in his last three games. Like, for my money, Nick Ehlers mm-hmm. and Kyle Connor were the Jets' best forwards against LA. Like, to me, they stood out, and Ehlers and Connor have been pretty good the whole season. Obviously, Ehlers more so than Connor when it comes to the results, right? But we expect Ehlers and Connor to produce for the Jets. They're top six wingers for this team, right? But there's no doubt that Wheeler is struggling, and especially on the power play. I don't know if you guys have noticed, but yeah. Wheeler's not exactly lighting it up on the power play, and that's...
He's got a big goose egg on the power play in terms of points through 11 games this season.
That is mind-boggling.
He had 33 power play points last year. That was 10th in the NHL, zero so far this season.
Right, exactly. No points on the power play, to me, is something that nobody saw coming. And obviously, Wheeler is going to start producing on the power play, and the Jets are going to start producing on the power play. But, you know, for me, I mean, I don't think this is the only reason, but, you know, Dustin Byfuglien was a mainstay on the blue line for the Jets. Obviously, you know, when Byfuglien got injured, then Jacob Trouba took over. And, you know, by the way, I like Josh Morrissey on the top power play unit. I don't know about you guys.
We'll talk about the power play in a couple segments.
No, but we're still talking about, you know, the struggles of the team. And, you know, the Jets, as Dave mentioned, you look at the Avalanche and the Predators right at the top of the league, like they're popping in, you know, 3.5 to 4 goals a game. I think mm-hmm. the Predators are actually at 4 goals a game.
So are the Avs. The Avs and the Preds are both at 4.2 goals per game.
And that'll come down a little bit, right? Because we're early, but I mean, it's not going to come down that much. I mean, those two teams have a lot of firepower, especially the Avalanche. So when you're talking about, you know, Scheifele struggling, Laine struggling, I mean, Connor was struggling a little bit earlier and he started to pick it up a little bit. But I mean, you need secondary offense, but the top line, the top six is always going to drive the bus, right? So yes, Wheeler has to be better. And, you know, that includes on the power play. But if you look at the Jets' power play, I mean, and again, we're going to get into some more of the technical issues.
The nuts and the bolts of it.
Right. It's not like Wheeler has, you know, regressed as far as his skill level. I mean, Wheeler still has the ability to thread the needle. And, you know, you go back to the goal that was scored.
Has he regressed 5-on-5, though? I mean,
go back to the game against the Coyotes. Remember the goal that was scored by Mark Scheifele in front of the net? Patrick Laine hit the post, and then Mark Scheifele was right in front of the net and right in front of Darcy Kemper. I mean, that goal was the direct result of Blake Wheeler drawing two players to him. So he has the ability. By the way, why wouldn't that have been a power play assist?
I'd have to look back. I don't recall exactly how the play unfolded.
It might have gone to somebody before Laine, but it was Blake Wheeler. I don't know if you guys remember that goal, but maybe we can, you know, during the break, go back and watch it on the Jets website. But when you're talking about, you know, Wheeler, he still has the ability, I think, to completely control a power play. Like, he is the power play quarterback. Everything goes through Wheeler, and
currently. I don't know if it still should.
Well, and think about the goal that Kyle Connor scored. That was, I believe, also against the Coyotes. I mean, you saw Kyle Connor kind of drift from in front of the net, and then he went to the right of Darcy Kemper. Mm-hmm. And you know, he did that. He had that beautiful backhand. So, I mean, when you're talking about Laine, Connor, Wheeler, Scheifele, Ehlers, I mean, the Jets have an abundance of talent. So I guess what I'm saying here in a roundabout way, Drew, is I'm not that worried that these guys aren't going to start to put it together and put the puck in the net. They're struggling offensively. And, you know, you definitely have to be concerned about it because we're not two or three games into the season. This is game 12 tonight.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that the power play is going to start clicking. And we know from last year, guys, the Jets feed off of the power play. They had one of the top power plays in the league last year. And it can't be as bad as it's been lately, Dave.
No, and I think to your point is that one thing that folks probably didn't anticipate with this team was a lack of scoring. And I think that, you know, we talk about the offensive weapons they have, and you've just listed a lot of the players, and we're seeing Nikolaj Ehlers, you know, bounce back superbly from a disappointing season last year. And to me, that was one thing that was never going to be an issue with the Jets. Like, we thought we'd probably be seeing more likely a little fire wagon hockey where the games would be 4-3, 5-4, that
the
sort
opening
of
road trip.
Yeah, like that's what we were anticipating with this Jets squad, not, you know, an inability to score. So I think that's more the question right now is, it's why aren't they scoring more? Why aren't they producing more? Because of the now you could say that this team is trying to modify itself slightly to be a little more defensively responsible, knowing about their limitations on defense, and as a result, they're not going to have the same chances on offense. And we heard that. That was what was being said throughout the course of, you know, the first week of this homestand, was the fact that the team is trying defensively to play as a five-man unit, to have guys coming back, to be aggressive in that regard. So you're not going to have as many offensive chances because you're trying to be more defensively responsible.
Well, so are they sacrificing too much offense by being defensively responsible right now? Because it's not like the defense, I mean, with the exception of the game against Edmonton, obviously a 1-0 shootout victory, it's not like the defense has been what I would describe as superb in the other games at home that they lost. So are they sacrificing too much offensively to be defensively responsible, but they're still not good enough defensively to win games?
Right, and I think the point that they would say is that their hope is that by being defensively responsible, the offensive chances will come, and that, you know, they need to, of course, do this because we know about their limitations on defense. So, I mean, again, it's interesting because
we're a chicken and the egg.
Well, yeah, and we're seeing the team try and do that. It's unusual in the sense that they're trying to kind of formulate this. And I hate the word identity already. It's already been way overused, like in so many different articles. Yesterday, I wrote in the papers. I was like, I'm already sick of the word identity. If I don't hear the word identity for the rest of the year, it'll be fine. But now to
There's only one thing that's more cliche than identity, and it's the word consistency in hockey. I mean, consistency, identity, getting pucks on net. I mean, there's pucks nothing really more cliche than that.
Well, yeah. But to your point, though, Dave, mm-hmm. if we're still talking about identity 5 games from now mm-hmm. or 10 games from now, well, you've played a quarter of your season at that point in time, and if you still don't know your team's identity, guess what? You're struggling. If your identity, as I tried to make my point last week mm-hmm. when I think we talked about it, is if you don't know your identity, you know, within the first 10 or 15 games of the season, that could be because you don't have the skill set necessary maybe to create a specific identity.
I think the word identity is often brought up as a scapegoat for teams that are struggling.
Fair. I think that's a very valid point.
Like, look at the Buffalo Sabres, Drew. The Buffalo Sabres were awful last year, right? It cost Phil Housley his job.
Yeah. They had that 10-game winning streak to start the season, but after that, I think they won something like 6 of their last 30 games.
So did they have an identity when they were winning 10 games in a row, and then lost their identity when they were losing 5 games in a row?
Suddenly the identity's gone.
Right? And obviously, Ralph Kruger's a great coach, and the Sabres made some good moves, and now they're doing pretty well in the Eastern Conference. So, did they have an identity now? I think you'd say, yeah, they do have an identity. I just think it's so overused.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. I agree with you there that it is overused. But I mean, you look at this homestand, and when you can't really, you're not doing a great job of keeping the puck out of your net, and you're not doing a great job putting the puck in the net again in the opponent's net. What are you doing a great job at?
Well, and just to wrap up the whole identity conversation, I think the big question mark is going to be 33. And I think that for the Jets is going to be, they're going to be tied together. And I think until they have some sort of resolution, I mean, the reality is
it's October 26th. How much longer are you going to wait?
Drew, I mean, the reality is, what are you going to do? You've got a hole that you can't fill.
Yeah.
And, in theory, you could make a trade, and you may have to do that. But like at the same time, who are you trading? You're going to trade probably, what I'm saying is you're probably trading a guy who's on an affordable contract.
Yeah.
And then you're going to still have that question about Byfuglien. So to me, all of this is tied into the situation with Dustin Byfuglien. I'm not saying that all the Jets ills can be blamed on him or are attributable to his lack of
his absence.
Presence.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying that there's no question that 33 is a big presence on the ice, big presence off the ice, and that a lot of this can be focused on what's that unresolved situation.
No question. It'll be, it's getting late early would be my point as we sit here, almost 12 games into the season. And on October 26th, this team needs to find a way to get some mojo and get itself feeling good about itself because, hanging your head too low and feeling sorry for yourself, as we heard Blake Wheeler say off the top of the segment in that clip, it isn't a long-term solution. When we come back, we're going to head out to Regina. Paul Edmonds is going to join us. We'll talk about the Jets. We'll talk about the Heritage Classic. We'll do a scene set from Regina. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number one. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290 tonight. The Jets and the Flames, the Heritage Classic. Classic from Regina, puck drop 9 p.m. here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can also reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website, the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio, is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program Winnipeg Jets play-by-play broadcaster Paul Edmonds. He joins us from beautiful Regina. Paulie, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure, Drew. Not a day goes by that I don't think about how I can get back to Regina.
Yeah, we'll leave it at that in that sense of the word there, Paulie. But now, sort of give us a scene setter. You've been there obviously since yesterday. The Jets took to the ice. They had the football practice a little bit beforehand. The unfortunate injury, of course, to Mason Appleton. What's it like in Regina? Is the city all abuzz? Is this Heritage Classic number one first and foremost in Regina? What's it like on the ground there in Regina?
Well, first off, I spent a couple of years here, very fond years, early in my career, kind of cutting my teeth. So Regina does have a soft spot for me. I would tell you I'm not surprised by what I have seen here in terms of the atmosphere. They have totally embraced this event. Everywhere you've gone, whether it's been the hotel or the Mosaic facility or in and around downtown, there's flags and something to represent the Heritage Classic. The luncheon yesterday was held in a large convention center room, and it was packed. And I think there's a lot of excitement. I don't think there's excitement on the horizon here, guys, that Saskatchewan, whether it's a combination of Saskatoon and Regina or Saskatoon or whatever, is going to somehow get an NHL team here in the future. I just think that this is a big celebration of the game and the history of the game that's had some great roots and produced many players from this province in the National Hockey League. So I think everybody's very excited about it. I do believe it's close to a sellout. You know, that's pretty good for two teams that are playing a neutral site game, and probably half the province is divided between, well, in thirds, you know, Edmonton Oilers fans, Calgary Flame fans, and then probably some Winnipeg Jet fans toward the eastern side of the province here. So they're going to do a real good job here tonight. They already have. And I think everybody's kind of excited about it. You know, the consideration and the concern here right now is the wind. But in terms of temperature, yesterday was 17. It was beautiful, almost, you know, affected the ice kind of negatively. But today's going to be a little bit cooler, and the wind will be a factor. Although when they drop the puck tonight at 9 o'clock Central Time, 8 o'clock here locally, I think the wind should diminish and the temperature should get down to about 0 or minus 1. And it'll have a little bit of that sort of football feel to it, but the ice and the conditions should be pretty good for this one tonight.
Paulie, how important is the first goal going to be tonight for the Jets? I mean, you've covered hockey for a long time. You always hear about how important it is to get the first goal, especially when it comes to playoff time. But when you consider, you know, how badly that first period went for the Jets against the Kings, and the fact that the Jets have been struggling to put the puck in the net lately, is that going to be something that Paul Maurice and the Jets are going to be looking for to you know, get on the board first and, you know, get some momentum in a neutral site game?
Well, if you go back to the homestand, of which Winnipeg scored the first goal in three straight games, they came out with three straight losses over that time. So is the first goal important? Well, I guess it is. I'll tell you this, and again, I'm not in jest saying this, Ezzy, but I think for the Winnipeg Jets, if they got the first goal tonight, that would be great. I mean, they started very slowly the other night against Los Angeles, but following that up with the next couple of shifts would be important, I think, for the Jets, in terms of trying to get the second goal after that and develop a little bit of a lead. Easier said than done, but I think the Winnipeg Jets, the one thing that's kind of surprised me a little bit is not the defense and the inexperience and some of the things that they're going through to try to grow their game as a five-man or six-man unit on the ice to get better inside their own zone. It's the inability to score goals and kind of outscore their mistakes. I thought that, if anything, this team through, you know, now the 10 games, 11 games would be in a position where they were winning 4-3 or losing 5-4, right? You know, scoring a few more goals. But it seems that they've gotten a few shots at times. First periods have been sluggish with a couple 3 shots and 5 shots the other night, and they kind of built from there, but they got out of the gate rather slowly. So to your point, yeah, the first goal would be important, I think, for Winnipeg, but it didn't serve them very well on the homestand. But the follow-up after that, just overall to generate more chances toward the net, I think, in the first period will be important for the Winnipeg Jets tonight, and incumbent on this team going forward to set the tone, get the pace going. That's what Paul Maurice worked on in practice this week, of course, was trying to get to a little bit more speed. He's changed the lines a little bit and just trying to get the guys to kind of move in a quicker direction toward the opposition net and not be so sluggish. You know, I know that Los Angeles has a couple of players that are younger guys and Austin Wagner that are a lot quicker right now, but generally speaking, that's a team that's getting older by the day, and it seemed that they were the faster team over the Winnipeg Jets. So I think scoring first would be important, following that up with a couple of shifts that is spent or are spent inside the opposition zone, in this case Calgary's zone tonight. Calgary's not playing great either, right? And their coach talked about that in Bill Peters yesterday. So this will be a real good test for the Winnipeg Jets and for Calgary. I mean, the Jets have a few things that they want to kind of get back into their game, and Calgary certainly wants to get a little bit more consistent. So I think that it's a pretty good matchup right now for what we see between these two Western Canadian teams at the end of October.
You know, Paul, how much of an advantage do you think it'll be for Winnipeg, knowing that in 2016 when the Oilers came to town, you know, there was the alumni game, there was the game itself, the Heritage Classic game. It was a spectacle. The whole weekend, I mean, it was amazing for fans, but it was kind of turned into something more than just a hockey game. Tonight, it's just really a hockey game. The Jets flew in, you know, to practice once in Regina, and then they fly out and they leave for California. So do you think that'll play a role? The players will be able to still enjoy it, but it won't be as big a spectacle as the one in 2016?
Well, I think it's still a spectacle, Dave. I think where it gets a little bit different from 2016 at home was you don't have the distractions if you're the Winnipeg Jets. You don't have the front office putting this this event on. You don't have all the extra things that the players are required to do as part of it. You don't maybe have friends and family rolling in to see this game. It's a neutral site game, so the Winnipeg Jets come here. They set up in a hotel. It's treated like it's a road game. You practice yesterday, and then you get down to some team meals together and things like that. And it is a little bit quicker. There's no alumni game. They didn't attend the luncheon yesterday. There's no sort of ancillary things to do or that you're responsible for with this game that you might have had when you were hosting the game at home at IG Field in 2016. So, yeah, there is some value to that, I think, that could be advantageous for the Winnipeg Jets. Paul Maurice kind of touched on that. He said, I'm not offending the game that we had in 2016, but this one's a little bit different for a couple of reasons. One, it's played in a place that is a hockey hotbed and the heart of hockey in Western Canada in a lot of respects. And it's going to have that feel to it. But at the same time, we're coming in, we're concentrating on what we have to do, and then we're back out of here. So I think there's an element to that, that the Winnipeg Jets might be a little bit more focused and not have the distractions that you had in 2016 where they lost 3-0 to the Edmonton Oilers. Looking back, I think maybe Edmonton had the advantage in that game because they came in, concentrated on the game, and rolled out with 2 points in a shutout victory where Winnipeg was kind of left standing there going, well, what happened? We were hosting this event and we ended up losing. I think it might be a little bit different for the Jets here tonight.
Paul Edmonds is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He joins us from Regina, to site of tonight's Heritage Classic. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Paul, you know, Mason Appleton goes out. He's going to be out at least a month with the broken bone in his foot. That leaves the Jets with 12 healthy forwards. What do you see the team doing in terms of getting a call-up from the Manitoba Moose? And does that mean David Gustafson has really secured a spot in this lineup, you know, going forward for the next, you know, month or so?
Well, I think they really like David, to be honest with you, Drew. They like the way he's played in the fourth line, and he's handled those minutes, and he's won some faceoffs. If you look at the faceoff percentage, he's been pretty good. So they're starting with the puck when the fourth line's out there. They've had some defensive zone faceoffs because of some icing calls, and they seem to have done very well there. I'm sure that a guy like Matthew Perreault would like to have his minutes up a little bit, of course, and kind of sitting around that sort of 7 or 8 or 9 minute mark, and then sometimes that fourth line in a couple of games on the homestand was in around that 6 minute mark. But at the same time, I think that the Winnipeg Jets are going to have to call somebody up. You can't go with 12 forwards and not have another body here. So I don't know who that might be. Certainly, I think the Manitoba Moose have had their share of injuries on the back end as well, but it seems like for the most part, they're pretty fresh up front. So I would imagine that we might get an announcement today at some point on somebody being called up. I mean, you want to have, especially when you're leaving after the game tonight, to head down to California for two and then to Vegas for one, you need to have another body that's with you. I mean, this is pretty easy to get somebody from, Winnipeg to Regina here, although, you know, the Moose were in Grand Rapids last night, so maybe the call went in after the game or some point during the warm-up or the practice for the Jets, not the game necessarily for the Moose, to get somebody moving. So probably I would think we'll hear something this afternoon because the Winnipeg Jets, as we've seen over the 9 years, won't move any further than Regina here without an extra body on the forward core in case something happens. And, I mean, in case something happens, we saw it already on the island when Josh Morrissey went down in warm-ups. So, I mean, you say, well, we're okay for tonight. We've got 12 guys. But no, I mean, something could happen between now and puck drop at 9 o'clock Central. So I think something will happen and we'll hear an announcement. But I have no idea who it might be in terms of a call-up for a forward to replace Mason Appleton.
Paulie, just a couple of more questions. Based on yesterday's practice, it looks like Paul Maurice is going to go back to the Schwelers line. Ehlers, Scheifele, and Wheeler, of course. We saw Ehlers up there with Scheifele and Lion A against the LA Kings. But just how important is it going to be for that line to click and score based on the fact that, like we talked about, I mean, the Jets are having trouble scoring goals, specifically, you know, Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler. And obviously, you know, you don't want to single them out necessarily because those are the Jets' top two offensive players. But just how important is that top line going to be? I guess it goes without saying.
Well, you know, yeah, you should single them out, not because you're trying to be mean or you know, be a verbal bully or anything, but, I mean, Blake Wheeler's the highest-paid player on the team. He's had 91 points each of the last two seasons. He doesn't have a point in his last five games. He doesn't have a power play point. I mean, he's a minus five on the year. He's got to be better. And I think that Blake knows that. So they're looking for some spark. They're looking for more speed. I think what we saw from that line during the preseason was something that was kind of exciting, and it seemed to work. So Paul Maurice is going to go back into the tickle trunk and pull that safeguard out here. And I guess we'll see if it works tonight. But I was not surprised, and in some respects, I felt a little bit more assured about what might happen here to get those guys moving when I saw that line together last evening or late yesterday afternoon when they were practicing here at Mosaic Field. So, you know, I think that he's looking for something that's worked in the past. And, you know, he's talked about this to us guys as well. That's why you saw the mixing and matching of the line combinations during the preseason, because, you know, you work in pairs and then you'll add that third guy onto the line, but you're looking to see what works in times where you might need that combination to work. And he already knows that Ehlers works with Scheifele and Wheeler. And he already knows that he needs more production out of that top line. So let's see what happens. And then, of course, the second line gets balanced a little bit more. I personally like Patrick Laine on that top line. I thought in a lot of respects he was driving the line. Mm-hmm. But now they're looking for something a little bit different. So he goes back on to the line with Ryan Little and with Kyle Connor. We know the third line works, and we've talked about the fourth line already. So he's mixed it up a little bit, but he's gone to something that he's familiar with, and those three players are familiar with as well. I would not be shocked tonight if all of a sudden we saw a little bit more zeal in that top line, especially in Scheifele and Wheeler, and some things started to happen a little bit more with the addition of Nikolai Ehlers on the left side. The one thing about Nikolai, though, he can't get into this passing game with those two guys. When he gets into some lanes and gets into some positions, whether he skated himself into that good spot or it's been Scheifele and Wheeler that distributed the puck, to him, he needs to shoot the puck a little bit more and not be afraid of that.
You know, Paul, before the season began, a lot of focus was on Connor Hellebuyck and his need to be a game changer for this Winnipeg Jets squad. First game, folks were a little nervous against the Rangers, but since then, he's pretty much locked it down. What have you seen from Connor Hellebuyck this season as he tries to bounce back and look like he was when he was a Vezina Award finalist?
A lot, Dave. I've seen a guy that's fighting for position and for space at the top of the ice to see the puck. There's a compete level that we didn't see on a regular basis last year to do that, that we saw 2 years ago, and that we didn't see through the preseason and through the Ranger games. So that's number one. If you're fighting and competing to see the puck and to try to stop it, I mean, that's going to bode well for you and for your team. The rebound control has been much better. He seems to have much better puck awareness of where the puck is coming off him and absorbing it, so it's not being bounced right back out into the slot and somebody's coming right down Broadway for a second and third opportunity. I think he's handling the puck much better. I'm not trying to do too much with it, but just make the stop for the defenseman on the retrieve or the stop and then just a little 6-foot pass to try to help out the defenseman and move the puck away from the net. And I do believe that at times he's standing up and being a little taller, and he should because he's 6'4", but when he does go down, the recovery to get back up has been very good for Connor Hellebuyck. So I think there's like four elements to his game that all of a sudden have turned, or he's worked on just after that Ranger game. And he had a little bit of time because they ran Lauren Brossoit in back-to-back games on that trip to open up the season. But Connor Hellebuyck has been very good for the Winnipeg Jets in the last 2 weeks. And as I've said before, based on the fact that they have this inexperienced blue line, he's going to need to be at that level all year if the Winnipeg Jets are going to have a chance to get into the playoffs.
Paul Edmonds will have the call alongside Dennis Bayak and Brian Munns for tonight's Heritage Classic game in Regina between the Jets and the Flames. Paulie, any truth to the rumor that Munns is going to wear a watermelon head in the broadcast booth?
Well, he's going to be down at ice level tonight, and it might be a little chilly. He's brought like his Sorels and a scarf and a toque, and maybe he'll throw that watermelon head on. Because he is from Saskatchewan, and he'll tell everybody that's around where he's from as well. So we'll see what happens tonight. But that's rather funny. How can we tell the difference, though? Because, you know, if he was.
Paul Edmonds joins us from Regina. Paul, you have a Pilsner or two for us tonight. Have a great call tonight, buddy.
I will, guys. We'll talk to you later.
Take care. When we come back, we talk about the Jets power play. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Why did your club add Lucas Pisa?
Well, we need some depth. We do. We need some guys who've got some games in, and he's got a great reputation as a real solid team guy. I had him at the World Cup briefly, and I think he can add something to our room. So we've got players that we like, and they're working hard, but you know, we're one or two injuries away from really, we've got injuries in the American League right now too, so we've got two defensemen down there that aren't available to us.
Injuries galore, particularly on the Winnipeg Jets blue line, also the Manitoba Moose blue line. You heard Paul Maurice reference that. Logan Stanley going to be out, what, a minimum of 4 weeks for the Manitoba Moose?
Yeah, he's out 4 weeks. It was very unusual. He didn't skate in one of the practice games the week prior to last. Mm-hmm. Then he played the Friday night game. Cam Schilling left in the first period. Then Logan Stanley left in the second period, didn't come back for the third. The Moose opted to hold him out of the Saturday night game, and then Coach Pascal Vincent announced that he would be out with a mid-body. Didn't want to reveal where. He started with...
Well, when the guy's 8 feet tall like Stanley, what's fair. His mid-body?
Yeah, his mid-body is most of our upper bodies. Yeah. So, but Logan Stanley's out for at least, he said, 4 weeks. And Sammy Niku, they're being very smart with Sammy Niku. He said Sammy Niku could have been a player. I mean, I didn't think he would be based on the fact that he really didn't practice with the team. He skated on his own this week. Mm-hmm. So for me, I didn't think Sammy Niku was an option for the Moose. Because you don't want to be, I get that there's a need, but you also have to be smart about the player. I mean, this is a lower body injury he's been dealing with for quite some time. Mm-hmm. No point in rushing him and rushing and worrying about a potential reoccurrence. So allow him to properly heal, get him back into the lineup with the Moose, get him the place in minutes, and then most likely try and get him up to the
I don't know. Sorry, I was focused on something on my computer, but have we even mentioned Luke Green? I mean, Luke Green's injured too.
Yeah, he's in.
Well, sorry, I wasn't sure if you.
No, that's fine. No, and Luke Green for.
I want to know what you were doing on your computer.
Research.
Crack research.
Yeah, crack research team we have here. Anyways, the Jets, of course, they signed Lucas Pisa. What happened was the Anaheim Ducks signed Lucas Pisa, and then they had to get him through waivers.
Right.
And he wasn't the Jets obviously claimed him off waivers, right. So Lucas Pisa is now with the Winnipeg Jets in Regina.
A team he had reportedly talked to already.
The Jets. Yes,
yeah, the Jets apparently had been in negotiations with him at some point.
Yeah, and for whatever reason couldn't get it done, but then they scooped him up let the Anaheim Ducks do the dirty work.
Sure.
And then they just swooped in and scooped him up.
And then the Ducks acquired Erik Gudbranson, right? So
they did from the Pittsburgh Penguins yesterday.
I mean, Lucas Pisa, we just played the clip. I mean, Paul Maurice talked about it. Dave touched on it. With all of the injuries, and it's really unfortunate for a guy like Sammy Niku, right? Because you know, you forget, Sammy Niku has never played a full season in the NHL, right? Like, mm-hmm. You think that he's been in the NHL for 5 years. It's like, no, he played some time with the Jets, but he also played with the Moose. And, you know, he has the injury problem right now. And it's really unfortunate, you know, for a guy like Nathan Beaulieu, who you thought was going to be in the top six. And especially when Dustin Byfuglien out of the lineup, all of these injuries, Logan Stanley, another guy. I mean, Logan Stanley was going to be counted upon and will be counted upon for the Moose, but he's going to be out the next month. So yeah, Chevy goes out and acquires Lucas Pisa, and Lucas Pisa is exactly what you think he is. He's a depth defenseman at this point. You know, he's 29, 30 years old. I don't think the Jets are expecting Lucas Pisa to emerge into a top pairing defenseman. With all of these injuries, they're hoping that, you know, he can provide them with some minutes. He's basically,
plugging a hole.
He's a veteran NHL body. It doesn't cost them a lot. It's not like he's making $3.5 million a year, mm-hmm. but I mean, you know, Carl Dahlstrom, I think, has impressed all of us.
Not knowing basically anything about Carl Dahlstrom,
sure.
He's outperformed our expectations.
Absolutely. So you're hoping Lucas Pisa can give
he's
you...
He's a placeholder.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if he plays 10 games or 20 games, it doesn't really matter.
But he doesn't change the Jets' fortunes, aside from the fact that he just gives them a warm body who can handle some NHL minutes.
Right.
If you're expecting Lucas Pisa to come in and fix the Jets' defensive problems, that's not what he's going to do.
And I know that it wasn't lost on you guys, but to me, the funniest thing about getting Lucas Pisa is Mark Letestu killed you all those years with the Oilers, and Lucas Abiza was the one who had the point shot that was tipped by Ryan Reeves to knock the Jets out of the playoffs 2 years ago, right?
Yeah.
So they've kind of brought these guys in that have killed them over the years. But, I mean, yeah, it's exactly what we were just talking about. I mean, Sabiza is a guy that has a lot of NHL experience. I think he's played with five different teams. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a former first-round pick, but... yeah, I don't think anybody should expect anything more out of him than to be a solid, reliable defenseman. You know, maybe he chips in a little bit offensively, but anything he chips in offensively, Drew, is just a bonus. It's just gravy. So that's what the Jets are doing. So I don't think you can be too critical of this move by Chevy. With all of the injuries the Jets have, don't you need to bring in a guy like that? Like, I mean, you're not going to bring in a guy like Alex Petrangelo, right?
As much as people want the Jets to make a big splashy move, it's not yet there.
But that goes back to the whole idea of the Buffalo situation.
Of course, it's not yet there for them to make the move. So you go and you have to get a guy like Spezza, and you know, like you said, you plug a hole, and that's no disrespect to him, but that's just what he is as a player at this stage in his career.
Yeah, and one player fans should be paying attention to is Jonathan Kovacevic. He's a very interesting player. He's 2017 third-round pick of the Jets. Plays for the Moose. And he has 5 points in his first five pro games, one last year, and he's got three this year. He had two last year and three this year. Gotcha. But he's a very interesting prospect. He's not going to play on the Jets this year, so he's not someone I'm talking about as someone who's a potential. But he's an interesting name to watch, and he's a player you should be watching for this coming season with the Moose.
And just quickly, Drew, that's the one good thing that comes out of injuries, right? You'd like Sammy Niku and Logan Stanley to be in your lineup, but for Jonathan Kovacevic, he gets a little bit more ice time. Nelson Noje, right? Yep. I mean, you know, these types of guys get to play more minutes. They get to play in top four roles. So that's the one good thing that comes out of injuries, but you know, Pascal Vincent would tell you that he'd like to have Niku and Stanley in his lineup, but at least a few other guys get more ice time.
Mm-hmm. Up and down the roster for the Jets and the Moose, the injury bug certainly rearing its ugly head. When we come back, former Winnipeg broadcaster Joe Piscucci is going to join us. We'll take a walk down memory lane with today being the Heritage Classic. We'll talk about the lengthy hockey history between the Winnipeg Jets 1.0 and the Calgary Flames. Joe Piscucci joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. If you prefer texting, you can do that. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates will apply. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program former Winnipeg broadcaster. He's our go-to resource for anything Winnipeg Jets historically. Joe Piscucci joins us on the line. Joe, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, guys. My pleasure.
Joe, obviously bring you on to talk about the Jets and the Flames and the hockey history between these two rivals. You know, tonight, the Heritage Classic in Regina, 9 p.m. puck drop. You can hear the game live here on TSN Radio 1290. You know, the Jets and the Oilers sort of got all the headlines, and that's sort of the rivalry that jumps to people's minds first and foremost when you think about to Jets 1.0, and maybe even the Jets and the Canucks when you think about those two playoff series in the early 90s. But to the Jets and Flames, the rivalry between those two teams, is it maybe a little bit underrated, particularly when you hear Jamie McCowan talk about, you know, yesterday talking about breaking Dale Hawerchuk's ribs?
Well, I think it was forgotten probably because the Flames dominated the Jets during the regular season in the 1980s. It was so one-sided back in those days. And even in that great Jets regular season of 84-85, the Jets were only one win, two ties, and five losses against the Flames that season. So even though they were going into the playoffs with more points, they were still the underdogs somewhat in that series in 1985, which, of course, they won. But the Flames just owned the Jets. There were a lot of blowouts in those first few seasons. And I go back, thanks to Curtis Walker and his Jets memorial site there where you can see all the scores from all the games. So this is the first meeting between the Jets and the Flames, and this was, of course, in 1979 when they were in Atlanta, their last season in Atlanta. There was a third period brawl between these two teams. 14 fighting majors were handed out in the game. 9 game misconducts. Referee Ron Hogarth handed them out. One of those game misconducts was to coach Tom McVay, right? Tommy McVay.
Yeah.
And that was his second game misconduct of the season. And why he got the... He tried to get into a fight with Flames coach Al McNeil that game, and Pat Doyle, writing in the Winnipeg Tribune, said, you know, Tommy McVay took off his coat, his tie, unbuttoned his shirt, and took off his top teeth.
It was a different era.
Oh, way different era. And the Jets were just, they didn't get their first win against the Flames until October of 1981. And but in those early seasons, the Flames were just so dominant. There, like I said, there were a lot of blowouts, and the Jets were on the short end of the stick too many times. So I think that's why people kind of look at that Edmonton rivalry in the 80s. They met them more times in the playoffs, and of course the hangover from the WHA in that last season in the WHA when they won the championship.
Oh, Joe, I love that you're bringing back the old-time hockey. I don't think we're going back there, but you know, it's great just to reminisce about those days. But you know, you mentioned 1985, and then you know, 1987. Obviously, we've got Daniel Berthiaume coming up in about 25 minutes, and you know, he played the majority of those games in net for the Jets that year. Mm-hmm. I think Pokey Redick played 2 of the games in the next round against the Oilers, but Daniel Berthiaume, I believe, played all games in the series against the Flames. And, you know, do you think that series is talked about enough as far as what the Jets were able to accomplish? Because obviously, you know, you had some great players on the Jets. Dale Hawerchuk obviously comes to mind first, and, you know, Brian Mullen and Thomas Steen, Randy Carlyle. But when you look at that Flames team, Joe Mullen, Al MacInnis, you know, Paul Reinhardt, Joel Otto, I mean, The Flames won the Cup 2 years later. So does that get talked about, that series, enough about how big of an upset that really was by the Jets?
It's kind of I guess if you had to rank them, it's not ranked as high. It's maybe number 5 or even probably less now when you count in the 2.0 Jets. But that was another season. That series opened up, and you're talking about the one in 87. That series opened up in Calgary. So the Jets, again, were the underdogs. And again, at that point, the Flames were dominating the regular season series between the two teams. And the Jets just showed enough tenacity. They had the great goaltending from Berthiaume. And they won that 1-4. And they may have swept, they could have swept that one. Those were best of 5 series at that time. But they lost game 3 at the arena in overtime to the Flames, but won it the next night in game 4. And so, yeah, the Jets just had the misfortune of having to play teams, and every team they seemed to play in the 80s would always go on to the Stanley Cup final, much like what's happening right now with the 2.0 Jets.
You know, Joe, do you think that the Jets are missing that rivalry that they had with the Smythe Division teams, the Oilers, the Flames? There was that hatred, that there was a mutual respect, but there was also a dislike. The fan bases disliked each other, especially from the Jets' perspective, because of what the Oilers and the Flames used to do. But do you think that's one thing that we're seeing lacking in this era right now? Because, you know, really Winnipeg doesn't seem to have much. I mean, Minnesota a little bit because of proximity, and Nashville because of, you know, they're competing for that, or traditionally have been competing for that top spot. But do you think that's one element that seems to be missing from today's game?
I think so. And that's because rivalries are really, I believe, born in the playoffs. So, you know, when you play against a team in the playoffs and it's a tough series and you win it or you lose it, that's where the rivalry, like the Jets-Nashville rivalry, which seemed to peter out last season for some reason. Now it's Jets in Vegas because of that playoff series. That seems to be more of a rivalry right now. So I think rivalries are born in the playoffs, and whether you have success or don't have success, because, I mean, the struggle for the Jets in the 80s was trying to get past the Oilers, and they just couldn't do it.
Joe Piscucci is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the hockey history between the Winnipeg Jets and the Calgary Flames, primarily, of course, the Winnipeg Jets 1.0, with the Heritage Classic coming up later on tonight here on TSN Radio 1290. You know, I mentioned it, Joe, off the top of the interview, Jamie McCowan breaking Dale Hawerchuk's ribs, and that's always been the what if for Winnipeg Jets fans, really, you know, since it happened. I'll ask you, what if Hawerchuk's healthy? Does that change the outcome between the Jets and the Oilers the next round?
No.
Making friends, Joe. You're making friends.
I hate to say this, but, you know, the Jets just didn't have the goaltending. Bert Jones wasn't there at that time, so I'm not going to hang that one on him.
Yeah.
But they just didn't have the goaltending and the defense. I mean, they had the offense, and they could score as well as the Oilers could score at times, but, you know, Grant Fuhr could give up five or six, but he wasn't going to give up the seventh. And the Jets just didn't have enough, you know, top-line defensemen to match up against the Edmonton Oilers. I mean, Randy Carlyle, Dave Ellett, you know, but then you've had other defensemen, and I don't want to mention their names because I don't want to disparage them. But the Jets had a lot of 4-5 defensemen on their team, more than the Edmonton Oilers had a lot more 1-2 defensemen.
Now, Joe, obviously some horrible news coming out earlier this week. Dale Hawerchuk is dealing with cancer, and obviously we wish the best to him and his family. And, you know, we were talking about Hawerchuk, you know, earlier, and obviously he was a huge part of those Jets teams that went to battle with the Flames and the Oilers. You know, when you look at his career, and obviously he went on to play for the Sabres and he went on to the Hall of Fame, but, you know, what stands out to you about all of those games that the Jets went to battle with the Flames and Oilers, and obviously they didn't come out on the right end, but what stands out to you about Dale Hawerchuk? Because he's someone who, I mean, we always have to talk about when we're talking about, you know, the Jets 1.0.
Yeah, well, I wish that Dale Hawerchuk had been able, and I guess he had probably retired by that point, but in Nagano in 98, because Dale Hawerchuk hardly ever missed on a breakaway. And Dale was a very unselfish player. Like, he really didn't have as many hat tricks as he could have. And I talked to him about this once. And he actually preferred, like, he'd get two goals in a game a lot of times, but he would always pass, you know, to another teammate more than try and score that third goal himself. And, you know, if the Jets maybe had a more dominant second line, and they usually did have good third lines, but they just didn't have that, you know, that good second line to follow up, you know, Hawerchuk, McLean, and Mullen. And they might have been able to go further. But Dale, you know, he led the team. He was all heart. He worked his butt off. And, you know, even in that last season of 89-90 when, you know, the new organization there with Mike Smith and Bob Murdoch, you know, were sort of trying to push him out, you know, he still worked as hard as he could, you know, and as was documented in the 1990 playoff series against the Oilers, and in game six at the arena, they took Dale Hawerchuk off the power play in the first period. They didn't play him. Like, what were they trying to do? And then, you know, when they fell behind 3-0, then they put Hawerchuk back on the power play, and he led the rally that led to the game being tied.
You know, Joe, yesterday the Jets announced that they were going to induct Randy Carlyle and Thomas Steen into their Hall of Fame. Two iconic players for the Jets in the 80s. What are your thoughts when I mention those two names?
Thomas Steen, you know, just quiet individual, not very, you know, he was flashy on the ice, but very shy, it seemed, off the ice. Randy had kind of his idiosyncrasies. He would do the same pregame routine. He would go to one of the you know, the end boards there up against the glass where the goal line is, and he'd put his stick up there. Then he'd go across to the other side and do the same thing. So he had this sort of the same routine every game. And, you know, his teammates, always liked to kid him because he was kind of as it went on, he was the old guy on the team. And I remember there used to be, in the Jets dressing room, there used to be photos of game action photos of the players. And besides Randy's photo, someone had taped a sugar twin package. And it had been up there for like, you know, a year or two. So one day I asked Randy, so what's the deal with the sugar twin package up on his photo? He'd never realized that it was there. And the next day when I came back, the package was down. So, you know, he was a great leader for the Jets on defense. You know, unfortunately, you know, his best, he was on the downside of his career. But, You know, that one of the tweets I'm going to send out today, and it's kind of a repeat of one I did last year, but, you know, he has the Jets record for most points in a game by a defenseman with five. But he was a minus four in the game. So how does that happen? In a 6-6 tie against Calgary, you got 5 points, but you're a minus four.
How does that happen? The 1980s hockey is how that happened. We recommend you follow Joe on Twitter, at Pascucci015. He's sending out some great videos showing the hockey history between the Jets and the Flames. And Joe, as I was surfing through your Twitter feed, I see a picture of you standing in front of a lot of very shiny trophies. Presumably, something to do with the Hockey Hall of Fame. Maybe for our audience who hasn't kept track of your comings and goings, what are you doing for the Hockey Hall of Fame right now?
Well, right now I'm doing a project for their resource center for the hall. So they have their videotape and film collection, and what they're trying to do is to digitize it all. So to take it off, because these tapes and films are getting old, and so they're trying to preserve it as best they can by digitizing it. So I'm responsible for doing that. I've become a librarian in my second phase of my career. So I'm digitizing all this old video. I'm seeing lots of hockey games from the 1920s through the 30s, 40s, 50s into the 80s and 90s. And, you know, the fun part for me is you find these old games. Okay, now can I identify which game this happened in? Which game are they showing from the 1930s? So, you know, then you can start identifying who's on the ice. So I've been able to find, you know, footage of Hall of Fame players that, you know, no one's ever seen before. Mm-hmm. Now that you can identify, you can see, oh, there's more of Howie Morenz. There's a goal by King Clancy.
Wow.
There's him playing defense. Bill Barocco of the Maple Leafs, yeah. There's one tape that we digitized there, and he just lays out Gordie Howe and Ted Lindsay in the same game. Beautiful open ice hits. It was like, oh, someone has to see this. And there recently found a shot where Toe Blake scoring the spectacular goal, and he's wearing what looks like he's wearing a face mask. And this is 20 years before the incident, you know, the famous, you know, he didn't want Jacques Plante to wear the face mask. In this highlight, you see that he's wearing some kind of mask over his face. So again, no one's seen this stuff. So it's really fun finding all of this, and then hopefully they can use it, you know, and they're at the hall and display it.
Well, Joe, keep tweeting out those Jets clips because
those are great.
We love every single one of them.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you're on the cutting edge of some great hockey history there, Joe. Joe Pascucci is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, taking a walk down memory lane, talking about the hockey heritage between the Jets and the Flames ahead of tonight's Heritage Classic. Joe, appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Take care, Joe. When we come back, we talk about the Winnipeg Jets power play. Daniel Berthiaume is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Paul, kept Neil out for practice today up on that first power play unit. What is it that you like about him, or has it changed?
The hands. It's just the hands, right? So the power play works off one side of the ice. It's Wheeler's side of the ice. When you have a one-time option up top, that's a different threat for that killer. So the strong side forward on that side of the ice has to change his route to take away that pass, or it's a one-timer. And when you change that route, it opens up 55 in the slot. It's just that simple.
Sarah Orleski with the question, Paul Maurice with the answer. That's from Jets practice. They've swapped the defenseman at the top of their power play one unit. Neil Pionk up there now. Josh Morrissey going to the second power play unit. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family owned and operated and been serving quality home-style food since 1985. For a hot, fresh breakfast starting at 6:30 a.m. weekdays and all day long and all weekend long, visit Bernstein's at 1700 Cordon Avenue. That's in the Cordon Village Mall.
Awesome interview with Joe Pascucci. Also, you know, great interview with Paulie Edmonds as well. And we've got Daniel Berthume coming up. But, you know, just talking to Joe Pascucci just brings me back to my childhood.
Yeah.
Right? Watching CKND, watching Global, and watching the original Jets 1.0. You know, just awesome stuff.
He's got all the stories. He's got all the videos. I mean, his compendium of Jets 1.0 videos is...
Oh, compendium. Look at you with the big word.
I'm not sure that's a real word, to be perfectly honest.
What's
just,
a word?
It just sounds like a big word.
It's a big word.
Okay, we'll go...
You know, it's actually the I-seed word of the day.
Truthiness. Is, you know, that's what that was. That was a little bit of Dave Minuke truthiness there, if that was a word or not.
I'm not so sure.
Let's talk about the power play, though. So they made the switch, and you heard Paul Maurice give his explanation that it's Neil Pionk, you know, obviously, with the right side shot, as opposed to the left side shot from Josh Morrissey. And to me, it makes sense. I mean, you can't have Morrissey taking that feed potentially at the top of the blue line and not being able to one-time it because it's on his offside. You know, Ezzy, you like Morrissey. You prefer Morrissey on the power play one as opposed to Pionk. So, you know, what's your logic there? The Jets power play certainly struggling so far this season. Last year, fourth best in the NHL at 24.8% success rate. So far this year, 23rd in the NHL at a 15.8% success rate. And the truth is, they actually have had the fourth most power play opportunities in the league with 38. So can you imagine what the season would look like if the Jets' power play, given all the opportunities they've had, has been as successful right. as it had been last year?
Right. And, you know, we talked about this earlier, right? Like, I mean, the Jets' power play, it'll start clicking. There's just way too much talent. Like, if you go back 4 or 5 years, guys, you could make the argument, you know, that the Jets didn't have enough talent on the power play. But when you've got all of these first-round picks, like Patrick Laine and Nikolai Ehlers and Kyle Connor, I mean, we know the names, Scheifele, Morrissey. I understand why Paul Maurice is playing Neil Pionk on the top power play unit. I mean, quite simply, you know, Morrissey is a more talented defenseman than Neil Pionk. I mean, Neil Pionk has offensive upside, and if that's the reason, because, you know, he's a right shot versus a left shot, like, I get that. I want to go back to that game that I was referencing earlier, though, against the Arizona Coyotes, because that was the last time the Jets scored two power play goals in a game. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned the Scheifele goal, and actually Morrissey did touch it before it got to Laine, so that's why, you know, mm-hmm. I thought Wheeler, you know,
Wheeler,
got the assist.
Morrissey, but, to Laine. Yeah,
it was Wheeler that drew two Coyotes on the first goal, but it was the second goal that Kyle Connor scored that I referenced, to me, is something, Dave, that the Jets have to do more. If you remember that goal, you know, and I was just watching it during the commercial break, but if you remember that goal, I mean, you had Mark Scheifele in Patrick Laine's usual spot there, kind of, you know, at the faceoff circle. And what Kyle Connor did is he kind of just veered a little bit, you know, to the right of Darcy Kemper from the net. And what Scheifele does is he just gets it to Connor down low. And, you know, Connor comes out in front and roofs a backhand. You know, it was a beautiful goal. And to me, that's something the Jets have to utilize more, because it's not just Connor that can do those types of things, you know, in front of the net. Ehlers can do that. I mean, a guy like Jack Roslovic, who, you know, you've seen both on the first power play and the second power play. So what I'm talking about is trying to get more goals coming from down low near the goal line, where you kind of, you use movement.
Are they too stagnant? Is the power play, you know, at least in the midst of its struggles now, too stagnant.
Well, but let's be honest here, guys. The biggest weapon that the Jets have on the power play, aside from Blake Wheeler, is obviously Patrick Laine. So you're going to try to get Laine the puck, whether that's a cross seam pass or, you know, just Neil Pionk, you know, getting him the puck, trying to get him the puck in open space. So yes, teams are definitely, Dave, trying to neutralize Laine. They're trying to neutralize Wheeler, but if that's the case and that option is taken away, well, then go down low and, you know, try to get it to Wheeler, try to get it to Connor, and try to use these players that have such great hands and great shots. Well, like Scheifele and Connor. So to me, that's what I want to see more of.
That's my point, though. I mean, I would be an advocate at this point in time for maybe changing up how the power play looks. I think Wheeler, who's a fantastic passer, does not have a great shot. He does not have the exceptional shot that...
He's got a better wrist shot than he does slap shot. Well,
yes, no question. But
his wrist shot's actually not bad.
You know, I wonder if you switch things up a little bit and maybe you run it through Scheifele on that half
right.
wall.
And then you have Wheeler down low in front of the net.
And you just maybe switch up where they are, because Scheifele...
Or maybe Wheeler goes in the second unit.
Whatever it might be, Scheifele is such a weapon with the shot And I mean, he can pass. There's no question that we also know he's a great passer. You know, maybe you put Scheifele, you run it through Scheifele on the half wall. Teams have to respect his shot a little bit more than they do Wheeler's. And then you just sort of switch up the look so that there's more threats. Right now, it just seems so predictable to me, Dave. Teams know what the Jets want
to
do.
Well, and I think that to me is the key. It's almost too predictable. There doesn't seem to be a willingness to adapt and know that the teams are predicting you trying to get it to line A, so they're covering for that. And I think to Ezzie's point, you have a multitude of other weapons on this Jets power play that you could be using when they have nullified your biggest asset, which is Patrick Laine with his slap shot in the power play. So to me, it's one thing, adaptability. The other thing also is, to your point, Drew, and it's one thing I noticed in the last game, it's a lack of movement. They really do seem to be standing around when they don't have the puck. They don't seem to be changing it up. And to me, it's a function of, it becomes predictable. The defenders know where you are. They're not having to constantly look over their shoulders because they know that you're not moving. And to me, that's a problem. If you don't get into new spots, then they can stay in the lane and they can be comfortable and they can get their sticks into the passing lanes, and they really, you know, kind of clog up that section in terms of, you know, like Ezzie was talking about, those seam passes. Well, they're not getting through because the defenders know where you're going to be, and they're taking it away. So to me, it's a function of moving your feet, being adaptable, but we'll see what happens, you know, as they continue to move on, because this is a team that has too many weapons to have a power play that's right now as ineffective as it is.
When we come back, Daniel Berthiaume was the Winnipeg Jets goaltender in 1986-87 when the Jets defeated the Calgary Flames 4-2 in a Smythe Division semifinal. We'll talk to Daniel about that series. We'll talk to him about his career as a member of the Winnipeg Jets. We're walking through Winnipeg Jets hockey heritage. It's the Heritage Classic tonight, the Jets and the Flames, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.